You're listening to Radio Aryan at RadioAryan.com.
Hello and welcome to Truthful Out Radio. Today's date is Friday, the 21st of September, 2018. It's the equinox and we are broadcasting at RadioAryan.com. We aren't actually live today. This is pre-recorded, but we do have with us the producer of Adolf Hitler, The Greatest Story Never Told, Communism by the Back Door, and the Freemasonic Victors of World War II, Mr. Dennis Wise. Dennis, how are you doing today?
I'm doing fine. It's an unusual time.
Yeah, a
little bit early. As yet to get in gear, but yeah, no problem.
A little bit early, but we've got plenty of topics to discuss this week. And last week I mentioned something about Malachi Martin. There was something that just set an alarm bell off in my head about Malachi Martin. You remember we were discussing him and it was what he had apparently seen, the prophecy by Fatima. And we looked him up on Wikipedia, and Wikipedia seemed to be suspiciously nice about him for a Catholic. He was a Jesuit. And I thought, well, maybe he's been a particular friend to the Jews, and he's been more than a friend to the Jews. I looked him up in E. Michael Jones' book, The Jews and Their Impact on Jewish World Revolutions and Their Impact on World History. And apparently he was a spy for the Jews at Vatican II. He was working for the Jews. They were paying him to lobby for them. He was passing back information to them. He was basically just trying to get the Catholic Church's position on the Jews changed to say that anti-Semitism is wrong in all instances, and that's actually what he ended up getting the council to approve. They said anti-Semitism is wrong in all instances. So regardless of what the Jews have done, regardless of usury or killing Christ or whatever. If you say that that's wrong, then that's anti-Semitism. And he basically got this passed. And he was also a real philanderer. He was sleeping with all these women. And that's covered up in the Wikipedia article. Yeah, well, in the Wikipedia article, it says he didn't have to be celibate any longer because he wasn't a priest. And that's sort of all that it says. But according to E. Michael Jones, he was sleeping with people's wives. And trying to get this idea that that contraception should be legalized and in the church, and the church should lessen its stance on contraception. And of course, this is because he was sleeping with this guy's wife that he was actually staying with. So really, not a very good person, I would suggest.
Well, in fact, I think I can remember Michael. Collins, I think he mentioned him once, saying that he was untrustworthy.
Yeah, a double agent.
Michael Parker Collins, agent. Yeah.
But apparently, I mean, he did write a lot of supposed fiction, which supposedly dramatizes what was actually going on in the Vatican. Satanism and Freemasonry and all sorts of things that Bishop Williamson reckons that he would have been assassinated if he'd actually written it as in this is what's going on in the Vatican.
Yeah.
But because he wrote it as fiction, he was okay. So, yeah, very hard to sort of make your mind up over. Maybe he was just super friendly towards the Jews and was actually exposing what was going on there. It's hard to tell with these people because a lot of them, you know, they just haven't woken up to the Jewish problem. And they do think that they're the people of the Old Testament. Sorry, Dennis? Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
I think that's the main problem that we face is that people think that the Jews are the people of the Old Testament. And if they curse the Jews, they will be cursed. And if they bless the Jews, they will be blessed. And the only way you can break that hold over people is to just show them the evidence that the Jews are not the people of the Old Testament. The Jews are the Canaanites of the Old Testament, the people that are hated by God. They're not the chosen ones at all. They're the chosen ones of the devil, exactly as Jesus said. But that's not really the subject for today, is it?
Well, can I just say that the connection, all the Americans, they all say, or the mainstream media telling lies, this, that, and the other, and they don't connect. Then who owns it?
Well, that's it, isn't it? I mean, you've got the conspiracy groups that expose what's going on, but they don't actually look at the ethnicity of the people that are doing it. It's always the same. If you look at all the owners of the big multimedia companies, they're all Jews.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was Marlowe we were talking to today, because he's part Jewish, apparently. But he was saying, you know, they own all the media, they own all the wood and all. And the guy was saying to him, oh, he can't be saying that. Of course I'm saying that's true.
That's anti-Semitic. Anti-Semitic to say that the Jews are...
But I mean, he's Jewish anyway.
Yeah, well, they can get away with it when they are Jewish. They can say things that we can't they?
Just self-hating.
Well, we've got a question that was sent in by a listener, a very loyal listener, actually, Okuma10 from the chat room. And he was having a debate with somebody. He's Bulgarian, and he was having a debate with somebody about Adolf Hitler going into Russia as a preemptive strike to prevent Stalin from coming into Europe, which is what you've got in your videos. That's what you're talking about. And he was saying that the person that he was debating with, he said that evidence comes from somebody called Viktor Suvorov, who is a Jew, and who has been debunked by lots of other historians. So what his question was is there any other evidence for it? I mean, we know it's true. He knows it's true, but he wants ammunition that he can use in his debate.
I mean, they may say it's bunk, by the way, debunked, but I'm not convinced their argument did debunk him. You know what I'm saying? Because that's why I went into in the series. I mentioned that it was an army, not for defence. He had 30 armies, and he had weapons as such, like tanks, where they had no roads, where Germany had, and the rest of Europe. So, you know, that army is only going one way. Now, some people turn around and say, well, no, it was just on the border there trying to defend themselves. Because they can't deny when Hitler and the other coalition countries went in, they captured millions in that first week. And that's because they were sat there ready to invade. They weren't just sat there trying to defend Europe because they were under no threat. So, that's the basis of it, and I believe a lot of people in Eastern Europe know and understand that. Surprised, like he's coming from Bulgaria, he didn't learn it at school even, but in the West they completely ignore it. And the reason I believe that is because in the series we found out that the U.S. bankers who funded the Russian Revolution and won the revolution and therefore owned Soviet Union, and it would have been they who would have organized Stalin to invade Europe and do what they did in 1941 instead of what they did in 1945. So, yeah, so proof about it. I mean, in the first documentary I did, I actually got this information from Wiki. Surprise, surprise, it isn't there anymore. It's now a myth, according to them. But after the fall of communism, there was a document, and it was number 103, 202/06, signed by the Soviet Chief of Staff, Kirill Meristkov, Russian's not very good, Meristkov, on 18th of September 1940, he revealed that Stalin was preparing to invade Western Europe on the 10th of July 1941 in a massive military operation codenamed. Now, in that first documentary, I put Operation Thunder. It was actually Operation Grotchi, which means Operation Thunderstorm. But when I put Operation Thunderstorm in Wiki, it went to someone in Vietnam. Only if you put Operation Thunder did it go to this correct page, which obviously I needed because people would have been looking to verify it. But I put Operation Thunder, which actually the real name is Thunder, Thunderstorm or something like that. Like Germany invaded the Soviet Union on 3 weeks of spur. So that isn't really contested. I mean, the fact that nobody knew about it, not even the Germans. Hitler says in one part, in a speech, he says, the greatest difficulty he had was he had to keep it secret. He couldn't tell anybody, only those on a need-to-know basis, because the amount of troops what were on that border, the only thing he had going for him was surprise. If they had got wind of it before he attacked them, it would have been a problem. But the surprise caught him off guard and set Stalin off on a run to somewhere along the lines, heading back to Moscow. He was believed to have a nervous breakdown. So, well, that's the source that I got, and that was from Wikipedia. So that's in part 25 of The Greatest Historian Ever Told. You can find that there, all the details. And the other information is there's an historian called James Perloff, who is an American. And I was listening to an interview not that long, a little ago, and he said that he changed his view now on World War II. He discovered some things, and he rammed a few things off, obviously, which I've already mentioned. I'm not saying he actually watched my video, but he has come round now for the reasons why Germany invaded the Soviet Union. Germany was never going to conquer the world, which the West was told. We've got to stop this monster because he wants to rule the world. He mentioned at one point the attack in the Soviet Union. And we quite rightly said it wasn't just Germany. It was a coalition of nations, about six, I think, Croatia, Bulgaria, Italy, Finland, Romania, a couple of others, and the Spanish volunteers, of course, because they had problems with the Bolsheviks. And so a lot of people think it's just Germany what invaded. But this coalition, European Christian coalition, every nation was Christian, went into the Soviet Union to catch them off guard and then to plow towards Moscow. And he said, he actually said it in this interview, and you can find the interview, I think it's Hitler versus the banks, something on the US bankers, something on them lines. I'll find out the proper title. And in that interview, he says that Leonid Brezhnev, the president of Russia during the 1970s, admitted it, that Stalin was going to invade.
So it's masses of other evidence there. And I know you were really thorough with your references. And I think I believe that you put all the references in the last episode. I know you would.
I had to, because I knew it was good. I knew it was what I did, though, is I put them all over some of the nicest pictures you'll ever see out of Hitler, because I knew they'd all be going looking at these references and trying to find out where they can trip me up. You know the crack, right? But I thought, oh, well, that's a good opportunity to stick about 20 pictures of Adolf Hitler being mobbed and kids loving him, and, you know.
Pictures of him with deer and kids and dogs and a bird on his shoulder.
Yeah, that must have caused a bit of a, you know.
Well, I just thinking about some of the evidence that you listed. I mean, the fact is, some of the important facts that stand out, I think, is that it was a load of tanks, and there were no roads in Russia that could stand the weight of tanks, only in Western Europe and in Germany. And the fact that the coalition were able to just zoom into Russia because there was no defense there, because all the military was lined up ready to invade. If the military had actually been in defensive positions, they would have had no chance. The coalition would have had no chance of getting as far as they did. So just the facts of the matter prove it. And even Peter Hitchens is starting to change his view on it. Even Peter Hitchens is starting to change his view on it. He's brought out an article recently questioning who was responsible for World War II.
Yeah, I think as the years go on, I think, you know, the things that are slipping. But I still can't get my head around the fact that we know Roosevelt worked for the bankers. We know they changed countries into corporations before World War II. They brought on the recession. And, Churchill, we know, also worked for the London bankers, the Jews. And so, but nobody connects. You know, Hitler kicks them out, and this is why we're all kicking off. They just believe the narrative that Hitler was a monster, and then, you know, today they think, oh yeah, it's the bankers.
Or they can hear that he went against communism. Another important thing that I think that you brought out there was that it was a coalition that actually went into Russia. All those other countries that you listed, plus you had the SS units from Latvia, from Lithuania. I mean, they weren't all supporting Germany going into conquer the rest of the world. They weren't all supporting Germany to invade Russia and take over Russia. It was to liberate Russia and protect the rest of Europe from communism.
That
was an important thing. I think another point that people miss when they say, oh, Hitler, the devil that was going after all these countries, and Hitler must have been a pagan. He got rid of usury, you know, which is essential to Christianity, is that usury is banned, and he got rid of it. As you say, he got rid of the bankers. I mean, that act alone shows you that he was a good Christian and that he was enacting Christian policies. Trying to looking after the nation, putting the nation's needs first rather than the individual. That's Christianity in a nutshell. Love thy neighbor as thyself. And it's saying put your nation's needs ahead of individual greed. That is Christianity.
Very few.
He showed it in his actions. You don't have to go to church to be a Christian. It's shown in your actions. And if you're searching,
Someone asked me the other day, they said, was Hitler a good Christian? Because, as you stated in your documentary, he had sex before marriage. I mean, he didn't get married, but obviously had sex.
I'm not sure he did. I think he waited.
Well, the thing is, she's that good looking. I can't blame him.
Well, I think he did. I think he was celibate. You know, there are a lot of famous celibate people in history. If Hitler had a girlfriend, he would have been concentrating on her, and he wasn't. He was concentrating on the nation, and all the women of the nation loved him. And if he'd had other girlfriends on the side, they wouldn't have liked that. So that's one point.
She was hidden, though.
The second point is that at that time you didn't have sex before marriage, and he was trying to bring in morality. He was against immorality and prostitution and divorce and abortion, all of those things. So he had his girlfriend, but he didn't necessarily have to be sleeping with her. Now, what was the point in marrying her just before both killing each other? Now, it would have been no point whatsoever just having a ceremony, but if they did actually consummate the marriage, i.e. actually indulge in the marriage act, then there would have been a point to it. So I do think that he was actually celibate. And also because of how electrified he was. It's like, you know, celibate people that are deliberately celibate and continent, and they try to withhold the life-giving fluids within their body as long as possible, they then, all that energy activates other parts of the brain and of the chakra system, or the endorphin system, if you like that, and it gives them extra energy. And this is the reason, I think, why we were able to go out and conquer the world when we did, because the men were celibate at that time. The only time they had sex was within the marriage, because if you had sex, the likelihood was somebody was going to get pregnant. So that they didn't do that. And in Britain, we never had monkeys. We never had monkeys showing us degenerate behavior, which they did on the continent. You know, they didn't even know about masturbation in Britain until the late 19th century. There's a good book on this called Are We a Declining Race, which talks all about this. And I think Hitler was celibate just because he was so electric. Tesla was celibate as well. Isaac Newton.
Sorry, go on.
No, it's all right. You know, it was what you said that got cut out there, Dennis.
All right. Well, no, what it was in the Great Story Never Told. They were interviewing somebody at the, in the forest. And he said that, you know, he certainly thought there was sex. That's where this guy was quoting me as saying that. I mean, but you've got a fair argument there, I've got to be honest. But to be honest, I don't think I could have resisted her. because I thought she was stunning. I really did.
Well, she was. But as far as I'm aware, she used to live there. She did used to live there, but whether they had the same bedroom or whether they had separate bedrooms, you know, that's a different matter. It probably was intimacy, but I'm not so sure that. Go on, Dennis. If you talk at the same time as me, the listeners can't actually hear what you're saying because that's the way that.
Sorry, I thought there was a gap there then.
So, just say what you want to say because I can't hear it and the listeners can't hear it either. Right. So you have to repeat it.
That's what I'm saying. He's probably got more willpower than me then.
Well, that was it, wasn't it? The triumph of the will.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
He did have willpower.
He did have willpower.
That is the biggest challenge to the will, is to, you know, refuse to give in to that. That is the biggest challenge that any man can ever have. And if you can confront that challenge, then you can direct that willpower to achieving other things. That's why I think he was celibate, because he was able to do these amazing things. You know, he'd shown that the triumph of the will. He'd shown that he had that self-control. And he could direct that energy towards reinvigorating the nation, reinvigorating the life of the nation. I don't think he had time for that, you know.
No, you have got a point, you know. I mean, this guy said it, but we don't know for sure, do we? So it isn't like it was set in stone.
Well, yeah, this is it. I mean, I saw a video by his valet. I think, I'm not sure what it was called. I think it was put out by the Justice for Germans guy. Remember, he used to have a blog called Justice for Germans. And he translated something into English, and it was the guy that dressed Hitler every day, basically, and looked after him and did all those sort of things, like his butler. And he said that, you know, she did live there, and, you know, they probably were intimate behind closed doors, but that was it. But I guess you wouldn't know for certain, you know, unless you heard them, I guess. But, you know, he wasn't saying he heard them or anything like that.
Yeah. Well, I think I put that piece in because it comes under a lot of criticism. Some call him gay, some call him, you know, paedophile, some call, you know, I thought, well, you know, if he's saying it and it sounds well, then I'll put it in.
The other main thing I think is, what was the point of the marriage ceremony? You know, if they didn't actually properly consummate the marriage.
Yeah, I think it was, according to the secretary of his, she said later in later years, she felt that they got married because he'd give her a place in history as his wife because she'd been so loyal.
Could also have been that, you know, that they consummated the marriage and that was a big thing. You know, wanted to have sex before they died.
I don't know. I mean, I don't know whether the atmosphere at the time was
conducive. Yeah, probably not.
Most of it's like 100 years in a row. Right?
Not very romantic.
No.
Well, let's move on to some of the other topics that we've got for discussion. And the next three topics are really, really quite worrying. And a few people have brought this next one to my attention, and you as well, Dennis. And this is Article 13 and Article 11 that have been put before the European Parliament. They voted in favour of these two articles. And what they basically are, they're copyright directives. 438 voted in favour of the reforms and 226 against, with 39 abstentions. And there's actually quite a lot in this, but the two important ones are Article 13 and 11. And Article 13 requires sites to filter all submissions against a database of copyrighted works, creating what the Electronic Frontier Foundation refers to as a censorship machine of algorithmic filters, which means that anything that uses bits from other films, bits from other television series to make a documentary, such as your documentaries, Dennis, they're going to have to remove them. And there's the second part of it, Article 11, is about published content taken from press and news websites, which is when you use a quote from somewhere and you put a link to it. They want to tax people for it. They want to tax people. They're going to have a link tax. So two really, really important things here that are basically aimed at attacking the alternative media, attacking the alternative news media that, of course, uses the mainstream media for their quotes, and attacking content creators that use previously made films and documentaries and mash up the content to make their own. And this seems very much to me like what happened in the 80s when house music came about, and you had lots of samples that were being taken from old records and old songs, and people were saying, this is totally wrong, you're using somebody else's material here. But it was actually incredibly creative, and a whole new form of music was created. And now, I mean, people just take samples. If it's a cover version, that's something different. If you're producing something that is exactly the same as what somebody else has produced, then yes, you should be paying rights to it. But if you are taking it and creating something entirely new from it, if anything, it's advertising the original that it was taken from. I mean, with house music, you then look back to see what song it was that was sampled, because you'd want to hear how that sounded. And I dare say that a lot of people that have seen your documentaries, Dennis, go back to look at the original material, like The World at War or whatever, just to see, you know, what the other side to you was. So yeah, I mean, this is the only thing I can say about this, Dennis, is that it's not actually finally pushed through. It's got to go before one other committee yet, but it might well go through. So yeah, what are your thoughts on it?
Well, like I said, I was thinking of because it obviously there's a time span. I didn't know when it was coming in. Like I thought, well, I better finish the documentary, as soon as I can now, which is what I intended. Maybe I've got a little bit more time, but it's when I say anything like that. I mean, we talked about it a couple of weeks ago about how it stifles free speech. It's a Jewish concept. And they've obviously not been happy with not just my documentaries. There's plenty of featured documentaries on YouTube about the same kind of thing, and like Hellstorm's another one. And they've obviously thought that it's causing too much waves and ripples and whatever, and they're using everything they can now to block things. So on one side, it looks okay because all these people who originally do the work all get this money. But what it simply means is people will stop making documentaries. And copyright, I think in America, is pretty serious. I think there's some people who got like 10 years imprisonment for it. So when I see that on, you know, suddenly come through this headline about the EU and its notoriety, then I looked at it and then obviously passed it on to you.
Yeah, fair use is what it is at the moment. As long as you're not copying the whole, a whole video, then it's fair use. You're reimagine. It's a reimagining or a collage
that's purpose,
that's put together. I mean, this is really going to hurt the creators. I mean, and people are very, very creative. It's also going to hit memes, where people are putting up pictures, famous pictures, and then adding a caption to it or changing it in some way to make it humorous. And it's really going to stifle creativity. I really can't see any artists that make their art like this that are going to be supportive of this. It's just trying to do away entirely with a new art form, purely and simply because one section of it benefits nationalists.
Yeah.
You know, and not just nationalists, but all alternative media. As you say, there are so many other documentaries out there exposing conspiracies that all use, footage that's already in the public domain. And, you know, I don't think this is hurting the original producers in any way whatsoever. I mean, people that have watched your documentary, Dennis, they're likely to go out and also download The World at War or download the original footage of Auschwitz, the original footage of the trials. Do you know what I mean? It's not like people are going to say, well, I'm not going to buy this now because I've seen Dennis's documentary. I'm not going to see, I don't want to see the original.
In fact, like you said, some people who weren't particularly interested in World War II until they saw the documentary, like just by, you know, the curiosity, are now, you know, looking for more information.
Well, it does. It encourages people to actually look out the originals and find out more about it. I mean, as far as
they don't want.
Yeah, well, as far as this second one, this Article 11 is concerned, I mean, at the moment, I believe it's people don't use more than a third of an article, and there's always a link put there that links back to the original article. Like if you've got a news site, an alternative news site, and you found an article on the Daily Mail, say, people will use up to a third of the original Daily Mail article, and they will put it in quotes, then they'll add their own commentary on it, and then they'll put a link there that links back to the Daily Mail site. So you've got a credit there to the original site. You're only using a third of the material, so people are going to want to read the rest of it. So this is very cynical, I think, because it is driving people to go back to the original site, but they're wanting to tax people for this. They're wanting to take money off people, which means that you'd have to do away with the anonymity. It's all just a really cynical way of trying to destroy the alternative media. That's all it can be.
The internet's not going to be the same, I don't think, if this does go through.
Well, this was a great thing about the internet was that it was democratic in the way that anybody could have a voice, and it was equal in the way that, you could put your stuff out there and anybody could find it. Somebody that, that didn't have a lot of money could suddenly find that they've got millions of views and suddenly became very popular. And it took that away from the mainstream media who up until then, it was only the mainstream media who had a voice. And the internet gave everybody a voice, which of course they all applauded at first. And now that voice is saying something different to the establishment, they want to silence it straight away.
Correct.
We have got some people speaking up for us. As I said in this, what was the figures here? 226 voted against and 438 voted in favour. And that 226, most of them were the Eurosceptic parties. UKIP are making a big point of going against this. And of course, they got Sargon of Akkad and Paul Joseph Watson, and they're all speaking up against this. And next year we've got the European Union elections, and I think the Eurosceptic parties are going to absolutely hammer the mainstream parties. So they could undo all of this. They could say, well, we're going to change all of this because the public feeling is against it.
If we pull out. I think it says somewhere, I read somewhere that if we Brexit out of the EU, I think it's only businesses what use the EU will have to pay it, as far as I'm aware.
Yeah, they said that even though Britain's going to pull out of the EU, it's still going to go along, it's still going to have to go along with this. But the EU is already messing up the internet. I mean, a lot of the time you'll get a link from a news site in America, which is just on the news, and you'll click it and it will say the European Union has prevented you from watching this site. And I don't know why that is.
Yeah.
A copyright thing or something to do with that. How can you, I mean, the internet really has linked up everyone together, all nations together. And, the laws seem to be on the internet what the American laws are. And what they're trying to do is carve it out so that, you have a limited internet in the European Union, a limited internet in America. It's like what they accuse China of doing and North Korea of doing.
And burning books, like Germans did.
Well, talk about burning books. I mean, archive.org burned all our audio files.
Yeah.
Rare audio files as well, the equivalent of rare books. I mean, a lot of those files don't exist on YouTube anymore. YouTube had taken them down. So they were rare audio, the only copies that were left of London Forum speeches, say. Yeah. And they've removed them, tried to pretend that they don't exist. Well, they do still exist, and they are still available on BitTorrent. I know that there are some people that put them up on BitTorrent, and if they could get in touch with us, then I can put a link to that at the Radio Aryan site. But yeah, they're just total hypocrites, what they're doing. Trying to hide information from people, hide knowledge from people. So you're thinking you're going to wind the documentary series down. And is that specifically to do with this, Dennis? Or did you think that, it's coming to a natural end anyway?
I think it was coming to an end anyway. I mean, I can always push it, but really I had a feeling that it was coming to that. And then when I did the last part, I thought, well, that's going to be a nice bonus part. It did have that feel that it was coming to an end. And I'm going to, if I do decide to do that, I'll probably then do a final episode, because remember, I've done two previous documentaries, both 6 hours long. This must be at least 5 hours, if not more. So, and then three documentaries is going to be a conclusion to what we came about. And certainly in this series, I think one of the conclusions was we discovered that the US actually did own the Soviet Union throughout World War II and before. Then we found that obviously Stalin turned and he got it back again. So that to me, it was a whole new light on World War II. I think another point is, I think we're fairly sure now that if anyone was using the occult, it were the Allies. Because obviously Freemasonry steeped in the occult, and they were Masonic, and all the excuses of Adolf Hitler being a Freemason has now been blown out of the water because of his tendency to close every single lodge down he ever come across and open all the churches. So that's another point, the occult, where they keep blaming or keep making videos of him. Britain, I believe, never lost their empire. I think I mentioned this early on. I said that, you know, when people thought, I think they played on it as well, because people thought they lost the empire, and so, you know, there's less money to hand out to the nation. Not that the nation ever really benefited from that empire anyway, as such, the elite and the Jews, yeah. But then when Rothschild puts a central bank in every country of the empire, and even more, I think it's only about three countries today haven't got one, then to me, they've been getting a lot of money without people knowing, because even I didn't click till this series. Another one, I think the Catholic Church obviously has got major problems, if it hasn't already gone as such, because it is now, well, it's the God of Freemasonry is now, you know, occupying the Vatican as far as I'm concerned. So whether or not they can ever save it again, hopefully they can. But at the moment, I think, you know, it's not the Catholic Church. That's for sure. And another major thing that I discovered is these are not all separate revolutions and separate incidents, which we were led to believe and educated at school. Like all these revolutions, if any revolutions were taught at school, are all linked now, I believe. It goes all the way back to the French Revolution, and 99.9% of all the revolutions after, and the two world wars. I never believed World War One until I finally saw the consequences of it. There were three Christian empires went down in that war. The Pope was banned from Versailles, you know, and it was a Masonic celebration. But the thing, what really struck me is I was listening to an interview the other night by a couple who was in Libya at the time of the bombing, when NATO started to bomb after the no-fly zone. They were in there. There were a couple there who were hoping to open the business up in Libya. I think they lost something like £200 million worth of stuff because of the timing of it all. And they went on to actually say that they were there at the time. And they said when the no-fly zone had finished, you know, it was ended, the Allies continued to bomb every day. They dropped more bombs on Libya than they did in the whole of World War II. Looking at what, you know, the lies about Gaddafi, very similar to the lies about Hitler. I mean, Gaddafi, for instance, if you got married, a couple got married, they got $41,000 from the government. If you bought a new car, if you took the receipt in, you get half of that money back. You know, he's built a water reservoir under the Sahara, obviously to keep things fertile, free medical care. And then at one point, they were taken prisoner, put in at the bottom floor of an hotel. And all day there's people, soldiers, injured soldiers coming in and being carried into a lift, taken upstairs. And like this couple said, they could hear some real curdling screams during the night obviously there was torture, but there were still massacres going on after Gaddafi had been killed, and they were all blamed on Gaddafi. Clinton herself is called a butcher of Libya now by the tribes out there. And he mentioned a thing where Obama and Clinton did get some gold out of it all. And a lot of gold in Libya, a rich country, plenty of oil. And he actually mentioned that the bankers, they were to blame. Because he was a top businessman and he'd been invited over there, a multimillionaire, he did speak to some very high profile people over there who gave him information. And like he said, it's the bankers, which my ears pricked up because obviously I knew it were the bankers from World War II. So the propaganda is very similar to what was in World War II. Gaddafi was demonized, a lot pack of lies, and then a murderous group of paid mercenaries, very similar to the Bolsheviks, right? But this time it'd be Al-Qaeda and these rebels who moved from one country to another, getting paid by the Americans. They raped every single girl, the Cod, who does that remind you of? And not only that, they were that vicious. I mean, I can remember the Russians, the Bolsheviks, nailing women to barn doors and kitchen tables. The similar thing went on over here, where girls were raped and the head cut off and then left in the fridge.
Horrific.
Doesn't get any sicker than that.
Horrific.
Sorry?
I was just going to say, what happened to the Libyan sovereign wealth fund? I mean, there was billions of dollars in that, and they seized that at the start of the war, and we've never heard anything about it since.
Yeah.
I mean, what right do they have to seize all that money?
Exactly. And Obama, I think, and Clinton, a lot went into the Clinton Foundation, according to this guy, and Obama made off with quite a fair bit.
I bet it did. Well, the thing is, I mean, hopefully they're not going to make, well, I say they can't. I mean, legally, laws are not able to be made retroactive. So, I mean, what they're saying is if people are making money out of this stuff and it's copyrighted, they're going to come for money. So, you know, if this does pass through, you might end up having to stop selling the DVDs as well.
That's crossing
the mind. So, people want to get out and buy them while they still can, because, that might end up being stopped as well. But this isn't all that's going on. I mean, I got two other stories here that are relevant to do with this censorship. And the next one is this MP called Lucy Powell, who wants to censor private online forums. Have you heard of her, Dennis, at all? This Lucy Powell and this, bill that she's putting through Parliament.
A
lot of people have signed it. Jacob Rees-Mogg has signed it, of all people. And it's a bill to make administrators and moderators of certain online forums responsible for the content published on those forums. And she wants to require such administrators and moderators to remove certain content immediately, and to require these platforms to publish information about such forums for connected purposes. I mean, what she's basically saying there is, all online forums, moderators are going to be made responsible for what people say. It's like banning people from having private conversations in their own living room. And if you're on a forum, it's the equivalent of having guests in your living room that you're talking to, private conversation between private citizens. And she's wanting to inject the government into the middle of that and make moderators responsible for banning stuff and removing it. And who are these moderators to decide what can be said and what can't be said? I mean, this is the problem. This is the problem that we've had, because what they've done in Germany, they've said that Facebook has to remove hate speech within 24 hours or it gets fined $1 million. And what's happened is Facebook are just removing everything, even speech by politicians over there in Germany have had their posts removed. And she thinks this is reasonable. She's obviously got no idea how the internet works. And to me, this is just like a private conversation or a conversation in the pub. You go down the pub, you have a conversation with your mates. Other people are in there, may hear what you're saying. If you're swearing or whatever, they might move away if they've got kids there. You know, and this is forums. You don't have to read what is said on these forums. If she doesn't like what's being said, go to another forum. It's like if you don't like what's on the television, switch the channel to another one.
Yeah, but I think it's just another backhand way of having a go at stopping these nationalist comments, you know.
Well, she's talking specifically about Facebook, but she wants it to be everywhere. I mean, Facebook is bad enough as it is. It keeps removing people's accounts and censoring what people say. I mean, you're talking very popular accounts. I mean, look at Britain First. Millions of likes. Hugely popular account. An official political party in Britain. Facebook removes entirely their account. Yeah.
And, well, he's running for president, isn't he?
Well, pardon, Dennis?
Gutterberg, whatever he's called, is thinking of running as president. He's certainly got enough money.
Well, it wouldn't surprise me. It really wouldn't surprise me. But, you know, just to think that they can say what people can and cannot say in a private online forum. I mean, it is private, isn't it? It's you talking to other people on there. Nobody's forced to watch it. It's not like you're standing there in the town square shouting this. You're talking to other people that think the same way as you. It doesn't seem to have occurred to them that this is like saying that everybody has to have a recorder on them at all times and they're only allowed to say this. You know, they're not allowed to say certain things. I mean, this is the harshest attack on free speech that we've seen yet. And it doesn't seem to have occurred to her. I mean, she says she's going to put in provisions for free speech, but we know that they don't include what they call hate speech as free speech. Criticizing certain minorities is apparently hate speech, the same as it's apparently anti-Semitic to criticize Jews for wrongs that Jews have actually done. I mean, this new definition of anti-Semitism says for real or perceived wrongs, criticizing Jews for real or just perceived wrongs is anti-Semitic.
Yeah, well,
you know, even if they have done something wrong, it's incredible. But and it's not just this Lucy Powell. Ofcom are now getting in on this as well. Ofcom, that's the group that monitor TV and radio. They're now saying online forums have to obey the same rules as Ofcom. I've got just a little report here on it. Echoing an EU proposal which suggests that social media companies should be fined if they do not remove quote-unquote terror content within an hour, the Ofcom suggestions include target times for removing offensive content. Such time requirements have drawn criticisms from free speech campaigners who have expressed concerns that social media companies are not equipped to make the decisions about whether content is legally acceptable or not. Last year, YouTube deleted potential evidence of war crimes in Syria following pressure to tackle terrorism propaganda on its platform. A cross-party panel discussion in the House of Lords in July agreed to the need for an independent internet regulator, although the panel stressed strengthening existing regulatory capacity rather than creating a new watchdog. So an independent internet regulator. I guess that would be like the independent fact checkers that they have at Facebook that are all paid leftist organizations.
Yeah.
But how can you say that, you know, that there it's a, what they're saying is there's an equivalency between what is broadcast on the television, you know, what people say on television, which should be regulated, and what people say on the street. There's no difference between what people say on the street in a conversation to, you know, what they are typing online, and they're trying to say people can't say certain things. You know, there's a verse in the Bible, and it's St. Paul, and he's been accused by the Jews in a trial, and he says, I cannot but speak what I see and hear. In fact, he says, I cannot but speak what we see and hear, which, and that was enough for his defence, for him to be allowed, him to be able to walk out of the courthouse when the Jews were trying to get him. So that is a maxim of law.
Yeah, yeah.
That you have to be able to speak what you see happening around you. And what they're trying to do here is to say you can't do that.
Stifle it, yeah.
You can't say what you see happening. You have to lie and say what we tell you to. And the most amazing thing I find about this is that it doesn't appear to have occurred to them, you know, to think about it in that way. They're just thinking, well, this is, it's hurting people's feelings, or it might incite people to violence. And they're just looking at it like that instead of thinking, well, hang on a minute. What you're saying there is nobody else can have a different opinion to the establishment.
No, well, like I said, the blueprint with Soviet Union is exactly the same. Obviously, no internet then, but exactly the same. You can only say certain things without getting thrown in the gulag.
Yeah, or accused of being insane as well. I mean, they put you in the lunatic hospitals and pump them full of drugs as well for criticising communism. And, you know, I don't think we can be far off that now. Well, they'll say
no, I think it's going to get worse the nearer it all comes to this new world order. You know what I mean? They'll be clamping down even more and more, I believe.
They've got to be absolutely desperate.
Yeah, well, they're capable.
Well, they've got to be absolutely desperate to be, you know, talking about doing things like this. Independent regulators for online forums.
Yeah, well, they're just closing certain channels of activity down, which obviously, I don't think Trump winning the election helped. They obviously felt this rise in nationalism has to be stemmed.
Well, he's not really been a lot of help. I mean, he has sent tweets out, oh, we're going to investigate this. What are Twitter doing, banning Alex Jones? What are YouTube doing, banning conservatives? But he hasn't done a lot else besides that. He hasn't.
Well, today, a plane was shot down in Syria. I don't know if you know about it.
Yeah.
A Russian plane shot down. Israel had something to do with it, I believe. And they were about to clear out this last enclave of rebels. And Trump actually said, like, that there's going to be a lot of people killed. I'm just warning you, you know, that, you know, we're ready to come to the rescue type of thing. Like, you know, after the last fake gas attack, Trump didn't even wait, did he, for any arbitration or anything to see who actually did it. He just went straight ahead. And on all accounts, he's thinking of going straight ahead on this if they were going to attack this enclave, but Putin's just held off for the minute. But I don't know what the situation is now with the plane going down.
Well, what they did before this, and this ties in with this, they removed the Syrian government's official YouTube channel. All the official spokesmen for Syria, for the official Syrian government channel, was removed from YouTube. Preventing them from, you know, getting across.
Giving their point
of view. And as far as that plane got shot down, I mean, that's just unbelievable. That is, the Israelis just went in there to bomb Syria 1 minute before they appeared. They let Russia know that they were there. And then they hid behind a Russian transport plane. So the Russian transport plane was in the direct line of sight as the Syrian air defences, and the Israeli jet hid behind it. That's the state as it is at the moment. So I guess we'll find out what the response from that is by the time that this podcast airs. But the Russians have said we reserve the right to respond in an appropriate way. What would be the appropriate way to that? Drop a bomb on Israel, I guess. 15 innocent men killed.
Well, the thing is that, you know, I mean, it could easily escalate. And Britain, France, and America are always going to go in with Israel because of the ties with the Masonic ties and everything else. So, you know, it's going to be a problem.
Well, I think it's only a matter of time before they pull RT off the air. I'm amazed that that's still actually on terrestrial television. Every television set in the whole of Britain receives RT, Russia Today News.
Well, press TV, didn't they?
Yeah, they got rid of press TV. It amazes me that they haven't done this yet. And Ofcom have warned about it. When the Scripples were first in hospital, Ofcom, I remember reading an article on The Independent where Ofcom were basically saying, we could pull RT if you want us to. If the government asks us to investigate RT, we'll be able to find a pretext and we'll be able to ban them. We're just waiting for the nod. I'm paraphrasing there, but that's basically what the article was saying. And recently they've said again, they're going to be looking at the response to the British establishment putting up those pictures of the supposed assassins, and they're going to be looking at the RT's response to that very carefully to see if there's anything that they can say is not impartial. I really do think it's only a matter of time before they do pull RT. I do like watching it. I mean, it is leftist, but
you're right.
It's still an alternative, isn't it? You know, it still shows that alternative. And they do, even though they talk down nationalism, they do at least interview nationalist parties on there. So that we hear what they have to say. In Britain, the National Union of Journalists guidelines say that they're not allowed, no journalists are allowed to interview any nationalists or talk about their platforms in any positive way or give them any right of reply. The only time nationalists are supposed to be written about by journalists is in a negative view. And it actually says that in the National Union of Journalists guidelines.
Yeah, well, I can believe it.
Well, of course, this is why with the alternative media, with alternative media journalists, you know, the mainstream media will say, well, they're not journalists because they don't go along with these journalist guidelines, which are obviously, you know, communist inspired, isn't it?
Well, when the Soviet Union come down, I remember researching that, a lot of the Soviet, the Bolsheviks went to either America or England, and England specifically brought out a law to say that they couldn't be prosecuted because obviously, you know, the war crimes were there, but they brought the law out saying only Germans committed war crimes, left them free.
Well, it's like the removing of the white helmets from Syria as well so that they can't be prosecuted. That was the reason for moving them because, you know, the Syrian government wants to hold them to account, wants to have them in court and show all the evidence against them. That's why they were whisked out. That's why they were removed. And the American government agreed that what they would do is they would separate the terrorists from the moderate rebels. They would separate the terrorists from the moderate rebels. And what they did, they removed all the white helmets out of the country. So what does that tell you?
Well, there's a certain bias in there.
A certain bias. Yeah, a certain bias that's always there. All right, Dennis, that's the end of the podcast. Thank you very much for coming on today. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. We're actually taking a week off next week. There will be something else on for you at radioarian.com, and we'll be back in two Fridays' time. Thank you very much for listening. And of course, we do hope you all have a great weekend, an equinox weekend, no less.
To Radio Aryan.